Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. Brian O'Leary here with you. The Brian D. O'Leary Show, of course. Thanks for tuning in once again today in the end of March, opening day of the Major League Baseball season. I guess I knew about it. And wasn't until this morning, really, and friend, good buddy of mine texted me, wanted to know if I wanted to go to the A's game today. Well, going to an A's game is, it's about at least an hour drive for me, and then an hour drive back, and then a few hours at the game. I just can't do that. I got a lot of stuff going on today and trying to work through it. One being the book that I mentioned, which is a baseball book that should be coming out soon. I wanted to get it out fast, but as I realized, you know, I don't have any of the systems in place to get this thing published. Now, once I finish, I will for sure. But I was more or less finished with the text on Monday, I guess it was, and I wanted to get it out, but the editing and formatting and all that stuff is taking me way longer. Like somebody saying, like either the 10 or let's call it the 20% that takes 80% of the time, certainly for the finishing touches. So I'm working on that. Hopefully it'll be done by the end of the week. I also got a podcast, the Natural Order podcast, I'm doing with my friend Adam Heyman, and we're working through that. And, you know, we want to get it launched in a specific manner. And I was talking to, some folks this morning about it. And one of the guys said that, you know, I think we pay, or a lot of people pay too much attention to the launch specifically, but I agree. I mean, I agree. If I'm podcasting, if I just have a podcast, I want to get it out. And the thing is, like, we already have a lot of things in place, but whatever. I said I wanted it out by the end of the month, which means the end of the week, which is tomorrow, but I'm going to have to punt on that a little bit and just to make it better, you know, or at least get up to my standards, up to our standards. But anyway, I got that book going on. We got this year's show. Got a few more O'Leary Review podcasts we're working on, getting out to you folks. Just a lot of stuff. So bear with me. It'll all be out in due time, and there's no rush. The only rush is really myself trying to work like a maniac to get it all out. And you know, I've gotten to the point where I think I was talking about a few days ago, you know, planning my day a little bit better and, having a plan, not a script. And even when you got a plan, it's kind of in the back of my mind anyway, it's kind of like a script and the script's going, my actors are off script. So I got to come to grips with that a little bit, but it's good exercise nonetheless. So I had my day full of stuff, and I got a couple things that I really needed to get done accomplished. So that's great. And we will just move on from there. But as I record this show, by the end of me getting it out, it'll probably be the last real thing I can do for the day, just the way I structure my work days. So, and I mentioned the Dan Kennedy book, No BS Time Management, I think the last show here. And this has been the perspective gained is from reading that book. I mean, it's nothing particularly new. It's just emphasis on certain things, just has been really helpful for me to get not only get things done, but get the right things done and moving. Always have an eye on, hey, is this what I'm doing right now getting me closer to my goals? And I would say that doing this podcast every day is definitely doing that for me, get me closer to my goals, ultimate goals. And so I appreciate you listening to it. But, you know, we got opening day today. And like I said, my buddy, were throwing it out there, kind of putting a feeler out there to see if I wanted to go to the Oakland A's game today. And I didn't know. I assumed it was an A's opening day. It'd be a day game, but it's actually at night. And so the night actually, like, I couldn't do it anyway, but night makes it even worse because I could have traveled to Oakland, which is, like I said, I think an hour away from where I am and hour back more, really. You got to add several minutes on either end just to get in and out of the parking lot and traffic jam, especially a night game. Like, there's going to be traffic heading up there. And going to an A's game before, I've even gone halfway kind of out of the way and grab the BART and then take the BART. It's just like, you know, it's rough, man. I mean, I used to, living in Boston, I used to just hop on the T and head down to Fenway Park. And that was, I don't know, 15 minutes of going super slow, a bunch of stops. And I was only, I think, 2 or 3 miles away from Fenway Park. So, maybe a little longer. I can't remember. But anyway, went to a lot of games there. I even went to opening day there one year, and I was saying, it's like, shoot, it's all been over 25 years ago now that I went to an opening day game there. And I perhaps went to a couple more opening day games. I don't remember. Definitely have a souvenir ball from 1996. I believe they played the Mariners. I'll have to, I'm not going to even put it in my show notes, but you can look it up. I believe my memory is correct there. But either way, yeah, that was Fenway Park when it was old and charming. Now it's old and, you know, they got a lot more stuff and still has a bit of charm, but you know, the older it gets, it's more, I mean, they've sunk a lot of money into that park, and good for them, because I think if they had built a new park, like they were planning on right around that time that I mentioned, they were planning on tearing down Fenway and putting essentially a replica, a modern age replica, you know, right next door. But that didn't work out, thankfully. But, you know, I don't know. I Fenway Park, I believe, might have been the first place I ever saw a major league game in person. I think, I'm not entirely sure, but, it's a favorite of mine. And, anyway, yeah, so I want to, you wanted to know if I wanted to go to opening day, and I can't. Eddie let me know that he's thinking about it a week ahead of time. I might have been able to figure something out, but hopefully, you know, can. I don't even really want to go to Major League Baseball game, but today I got the juices flowing today with baseball in the air, and like some of these, like, it's just weird seeing the pitch clock up there all the time on the you know, the score bug. And it's just, yeah, I get it to some degree, but it, you know, it's one of these things. I go back and study the game, and even as a coach, like, it's been in the rules that you have to pitch with whatever. Or I'm not sure exactly over the last several years, but I'm pretty sure in the rule code you had to pitch within 20 seconds. It's just now they have an enforcement mechanism with the stupid pitch clock, and there's no nuance with it. And, you know, I don't like that. And again, you know, you leave it up to umpires without a clock, you got problems there. But the game seemed to be moving on fine. And then I saw a tweet or something, like the Yankees Giants game that was played earlier in the day ended in whatever time it was, and these people were all giddy and happy that, oh great, it was the shortest game over the last 40 years if you took the average time of game for the last whatever, however many years, I'm not sure. It's like, okay, well, that's just one game, and a bunch of games go into averages. So there's been a lot of games that went way less time. And why is that a virtue? Ending a game as fast as you can. Why is that virtuous? I don't get it. It's just the game is the game, and it has its own pace. I like a faster pace of baseball. I really do. And especially as a coach, I like to get my guys moving quickly, moving in and out of the dugout between innings, get ready to go. Pitcher controls the pace of the game. But then there's the cat and mouse of the hitter has to slow the pitcher down a little bit. And that type of thing is not available, especially with the lack of being able to even call time. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And these somewhat small changes are, as I see it, going to be major impacts on the game. And whereas before, I argue, in this in this book coming out. I believe I do anyway. I have to go back and see if it's something I thought or something I wrote. But the changes of the game in a game of baseball over the course of time have largely been organic in nature and fairly mild, that just change something that should be changed. And, you know, like what are they supposedly they polled a bunch of fans to say, well, oh yeah, we want the games shorter. It's like, well, you know, what's a few minutes here or there? And they still, and I harp on it all the time, they still don't do anything about the in-between innings time. That they, if they really wanted to do this, they could shave off, I think at least 20 minutes and the game would move along a lot faster, but they wouldn't have as much time to earn all these big, this big money from television commercials. And so we're not getting the whole story here. I think that Major League Baseball, in order to survive, needs a revenue stream for sure. And these revenue streams are, a couple of these are like bone dry right now with some of these regional sports networks going bankrupt. And so they're going to take a major haircut, probably, both these networks and the teams themselves, if they can't get paid in full. And then what are they going to do with all the salaries they committed? You know, we got a lot more problems here than we originally anticipated as far as baseball goes. But I don't know. I think last year the National League instituted permanent designated hitter rule, and then the leagues themselves, they have nominally the American League and National League and the divisions, but these teams now, I believe starting this year, they'll play every team plays everybody for at least a certain amount of games. I think at least three games. I don't know that that's necessarily a benefit. It used to be, you know, when I was growing up and for 100 years or not quite that long, let's see, American League started in 1901. And they didn't start interleague play until, what, 1995 or 98 or something like that? So, yeah, close to 100 years. It was part of the deal. You know, you played exhibition games if you wanted, like the Cubs and White Sox played, and they played cross league and spring training all the time. That was neat to see your National League team play your American League team or a favorite, you know, just to see those different matchups and those players play against each other. That's fine. They did that. They've been doing that for ages. But, you know, it's, you know, essentially part of the game now. And like, I don't know that it improves the product of the game at all. There used to be, like I said, there used to be two separate leagues. And now it's all under the umbrella of the Major League Baseball corporate umbrella, which, you know, like, it stamps nominally American League and National League. Like, back in the day, there'd be no way a team would move from the National League to the American League or vice versa. Like, it was just unbelievable when the Brewers moved from the American League to the National League. It was like, what in the heck is going on? And then the Astros moved from the National League to the American League. It's like, oh, man. But, like, it doesn't really matter a whole lot when you have interleague. And they say, it's better that the Astros are in the division with the Rangers. Who cares? The Giants aren't in the same division as the A's or the Dodgers and the Angels, you know, except for that 2020 season where they played 60 games, which is a travesty. But hopefully we don't have that happen again. That would be horrible for everything. And frankly, I don't even consider that a championship season, 2020. I mean, in the record book it is, but I mean, really, you look at it, it wasn't a serious season by any means. You know, good for the Dodgers for winning it, but 60 games and then play playoffs that are like a third, essentially a third of that many games. Like, what? I don't know what we're entering into, but I love baseball and I'm glad to see it back, at least being played. And I have to say, I was watching a bit of the Red Sox Baltimore game, which the Orioles won 10-9, and Baltimore actually figures in quite in this book coming out too. So if you're a Baltimore fan, then yeah, you want to get it too. But anyway, Adley Rutschman, first swing he ever had on an opening day because he got called up last year. Adley Rutschman, Portland area native, I should say. I've known his father for years and years. But his first swing, he hit a dinger out of Fenway Park, just like old Ted Williams. And switch hitting catcher, hit left-handed here, and first swing I guess he ever had an opening day, knocked it out of the park, which is pretty awesome. And he's a phenomenal player, great catcher. It's good to see him do that. And I'm generally by nature a Red Sox fan, and hard to see them lose, especially in the manner they did. I'm not really particularly sure about the direction of that ball club right now. I have a lot of questions, let's put it that way. But that's for another day, and I mean, I don't know if I'll ever get to that. I might get to it later in the season when things either change for better or for worse, because I could be proven wrong for sure. And I have been in the past, but often I'm pretty right on the money with my analysis on the way things are going. But I also saw, speaking of teams that I enjoy or franchises that I've grown up with that are in the midst of struggle, I saw that Portland Trailblazers, Chauncey Billups, who's their head coach right now, he reached 99 losses faster than either anybody in franchise history as a head coach, or second, maybe to, I think Jack McCloskey was the original coach of the Trailblazers when they were expansion team. So that's not looking good for the Rose City there. And Chauncey's career, I like Chauncey Billups. Don't know, again, the direction of that club is, you know, is kind of haphazard, other than having Damian Lillard as their star and who never gets enough credit or support. What are you going to do? But I don't know that it's all Billups' fault. I think they've had a carousel of management decisions that have been not particularly great. And yeah, so we'll see what happens there in Portland. I don't know. The way the NBA is going, and it's not nearly as compelling as it once was anyway. I mean, these things go in cycles, I think. And I remember growing up, the NBA was kind of on its first real big rebound. I think it started kind of right around the era when Portland won its first championship, but those games were all on, or not all, but a lot of the NBA finals games even were on tape delay, which is kind of absurd to me to even think about that these days, but they were. And I think it was up until the 82, 83, 84 season, one of those, where finally all the finals games, or maybe it was all the playoff games, were finally not on tape delay anymore on for television. It's like crazy. But even growing up, I remember Trailblazer games on television, if they play road games, because we couldn't get home games back then, other than if they're on national television, but the local television package, if they're playing East Coast games, or maybe even Central Time games, the games would be on delay until they would start at, I believe, 5 o'clock local time. So you could get the radio broadcast and listen to that if you wanted. And matter of fact, there was most of the years Monday Night Football was on tape delay. And then there was one year it was off tape delay. And then they went back to tape delay until finally, I don't know, it was the NFL or something, said no tape delay in any market. Portland was one of maybe two or three markets that had it on tape delay. But anyway, you know, like I was saying about the NBA, these things go in cycles. And I think we're in a down cycle here for the NBA. I mean, granted, it's popular as far as numbers go, but as far as engagement, No, from the average fan. I consider myself a huge NBA fan, and I can't really get into it. Same thing with Major League Baseball, for that matter. I'm a bigger baseball fan probably than basketball, but it's still tough. It's still tough. And the leagues and the commissioners and the people in charge of all these things have probably a lot more to do with it, I would guess, than the inherent sport, the underlying sport, or the personalities or the players or anything like that. It's just it's a different thing, and they're chasing money in the short term versus fans, and I would say even more than fans, like true devotees of the sport in the long run. And I think that's really the beauty of the NBA. In the 80s, like really kind of as much as there was a lot of really bad things about him, but the way David Stern turned around that league, really pretty remarkable turnaround. And you know, nowadays, it's different. You know, and you know, there's a lot of organizations that come and go, but you know, we got the Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, and the NHL to some degree, although. Yeah, that has gone up and down as far as engagement and popularity, and it, you know, it should be. It's a great sport. It's a great sport, and I just don't know how they turned that around either. But I mean, as far as the big four sports go, the NFL is probably king, even though they are a hot mess too. So, but they do a lot more things right than they do wrong, I think, as far as they're kind of, in my opinion, they're trending downward, like all these sports. And I don't know what we do. I don't say that we should just reflexively back these leagues, because these leagues have what led their decision making is what led us into where we are now and all the problems with it. And you know, whatever. I mean, getting back to what I said at the beginning of the show, it's like I had a tweet over the weekend, which kind of really spawned me to publish this book that I'm working on. But essentially, that college baseball is a failed sport, and I talked a lot about failure earlier this week of failed enterprises, and it really stemmed from this thing where I said college baseball is a failed sport, and a lot of people came down really hard on me. I don't really care. Because they don't even understand what they're watching or where I'm coming from when I say that. And so anyway, if you are on the same page as me, you'll understand. But if you just reflexively want to argue, then like there's no point. Don't agree on first principles, so let's just move on. But anyway, so I say college baseball is a failed sport. It doesn't mean that there's not a whole lot of fans, right? There's not there. Yeah, there is. I see the stats. I see the games. And it's largely fans from the schools they like. There's other schools that have terrible fans, and it's a terrible game with terrible coaches, bad players, and terrible environments. But that's not the point. The point of the whole thing is like the rules. The rules are a big part of it. And like we are watching baseball to some degree, but I have the analogy, and I'll leave it at this here. The analogy I have is like when I got into golf, I've been playing golf for a long, long, most of my life, but I guess until I really started keeping a handicap and playing somewhat competitive golf in a golf league, I didn't really understand that what I was doing before wasn't really playing golf. I used golf clubs, used golf ball, played on a golf course, but what I was doing was not necessarily playing golf. I didn't follow all the rules. I didn't even know the rules. I kind of did. And that's just what you get with people, a lot of people playing golf. It's like, oh, I'm just going to take another one, or I'm going to move this out of the whatever and put it here. And like, well, you can't, that's not golf. Like it is something. Like you are playing with all the equipment and the facilities, but you're not playing golf at that point. Like we can't play on an even field. There's no, like if I'm playing against you and you do that, well, we didn't play a match of golf, played something else. And I also compare it to that movie Tin Cup with Kevin Costner, where he challenges some guy, I haven't seen it in years, but he challenges a guy to play, and where Costner had a bunch of garden tools and the other guy had golf clubs, and he ended up beating the guy with garden tools. Well, that was a bet. That wasn't golf. The guy could play golf. The one guy was playing with golf clubs and golf ball and all that stuff. Costner was playing with a golf ball on a golf course, but he was playing with different equipment, like essentially illegal golf equipment, but whatever. I mean, it's a bet. They used a golf course, but they weren't playing the game of golf. So my point being is that, yeah, okay, they changed the rules. And so, yeah, they are playing college baseball because that's the rule code. But, I mean, the more and more you monkey with the rules, the more and more you get away from the nature or the true nature of the game. And that's my biggest problem. And the people changing or making a lot of the new rules, I don't know. I don't know if they have the best intentions for the game in mind or in their heart. And I really question it because I know a lot of these people or have over the course of time. And if I don't know them personally, I know their type and they're not people I trust with the future of the game, frankly. And, you know, I hope things change. And I just don't know the exact mechanism to change because the game is going to keep on going regardless. I don't believe that it's going to grow the way they want or need it to keep up with, you know, all the expenditures that are out there right now. I don't know. But I just think something's lost. And then the other, well, I said it was going to be the last thing, but one last thing, especially about baseball, a lot of people replying to me on this thing. I'm not even going to put it in the show notes because I don't have time to do it today. But what happened was, oh yeah, baseball's in the best shape it's ever been, and college baseball's been in the best shape it's ever been. And I'm like, okay, well that's not hard to do. College baseball's struggled its entire existence to be relevant, and it's still not particularly culturally relevant. It is among a niche. It is amongst a niche crowd, and count me among them. I mean, I like it. My point in this tweet was that I like the game, I like going to the game still. I like watching the game because it has elements of baseball. I just don't see it as baseball. But the other thing, I stumbled across a picture yesterday of Babe Ruth in his final season. I didn't even see Babe Ruth himself in the photo, but his final season arriving at spring training in St. Petersburg, Florida for the Boston Braves, where he played his final season, but only part of the season until he hung him up because he wasn't good anymore he wasn't good enough for his standards anymore. Swamped with people, just swamped to see Babe Ruth arrive at the facility or the hotel or whatever. I mean, you want to say baseball's in the best place it's ever been? No. I don't even know if 1935 was even close to the best baseball has ever been, but it sure is a lot better than today. And it's just pretty telling that, you know, I would say that a lot of the talent, we have more people on earth, more people watch baseball, more people perhaps play baseball than they did before, but just the percentage of engagement for the entire culture here in America is way less. Like, I couldn't get enough of it when I was a kid, and most of my friends couldn't get enough of it. And maybe that's why they were my friends, and maybe I have a skewed perspective on it, but I don't think so. So anyway, yeah, hopefully things change, because baseball has been really, like I've said before on the show, been the driving force for most of my life. And you know, not only do I see things through the lens of baseball and sports in general, but it just gives me a way to see things. It's kind of somewhat depressing, but as I was talking to somebody this morning or the other day, and can't remember now, and it's like, part of doing this podcast is therapeutic, because I can't sit down and have a conversation with somebody about this. I get to have a conversation with you, and it's for, you know, say 30 minutes or so now, and you can nod your head in agreement, because like I say, the more that you think about my ideas, the more you'll agree with them. I believe that. And if you just think about it and just go ahead and think about this stuff, you don't have to agree necessarily immediately, and you can have counterpoints. I'm willing to entertain them too, but I'm pretty sure the more that you think about what I have to say, the more you will agree. So I'll just leave you at that, and appreciate your time, and I'll sign off for the day.
With old world craftsmanship and meticulous attention to detail, Leatherhead Sports has carved out a niche in distinctive, finely crafted American leather goods. Leatherhead is a premier provider for American-made heirloom quality sporting goods. Their handmade, expertly crafted footballs are their most popular products, but Leatherhead also offers artisan leather baseballs, Naismith-style basketballs, rugby balls, 12-panel 1930 World Cup replica soccer balls, medicine balls in the 14 and 18-pound versions, custom footballs, and other custom balls. The founder of Leatherhead Sports, Paul Cunningham, started the company because his passion was in making beautiful, heirloom-quality sporting goods. Paul says, in a connected modern world, we want to remind folks that the best memories of sports are from when we were young and our sporting goods were made to last. Leatherhead also provides a football repair service for that special football in your life that has fallen on hard times. Maybe that old ball of yours doesn't inflate anymore or the laces are falling apart. Leatherhead to the rescue. They'll repair it. If the ball no longer holds air, Leatherhead will replace the old bladder with a new butyl rubber bladder. Need relacing? Leatherhead uses genuine, rubberized football lace. And for good measure, they'll do a light reconditioning of the leather for you before it is returned. BrianDOleary.com/leatherhead.